We come this week to question 8 of the Shorter Catechism. How doth God execute His decrees? God executed His decrees in the work of creation, the works of creation and providence. Now this is an interesting question and answer this week because there are no scriptural references to the 8th question or to the answer. And that may seem to be a bit odd, but part of the reason for that is that the two subjects that are mentioned here are expounded more in the following questions. So we come then to kind of a branch, as you would notice we've done that in the past, where two or three things are mentioned and then those things are broken down. And so that's what happens this week in question 8. So how doth God execute His decrees represents another subdivision in the catechism. For today, we want to focus on how the decrees are carried out. Last week we talked about the decrees, and we're going to see the details of how the decrees are carried out next time. But this, I think it's good for us to focus on really the fact that the decrees are carried out, and that God has a plan for doing that. And again, we'll see more about that in detail later. But it's kind of an important thing to stop and consider. There's a lot of weight to this question, really. Francis Beatty says in examining this particular question and answer, he says, it carries forth the exposition forward from the decrees to their execution, from the eternal purpose to its realization in time, from the all-comprehensive plan to its actual coming to pass. God executes His decrees, realizes His purpose, or carries out His plan in the works of creation and providence. Now, if you pay attention there to some of those details that he mentioned, carrying out the decrees of God in time, that's really something that we struggle with, right? That actually puts sort of a finger right on the pulse of many of our problems, and that is being patient with God's carrying out His decrees and realizing that God carries out His decrees in a specific way. Well, much of our life really is spent in struggling against not necessarily the decrees, but the carrying out of the decrees. And we can come to terms with the things that God tells us that are difficult. But what makes it more difficult is sometimes it might take 20 or 30 years for a specific thing to work itself out. And so that's where we struggle, and really is at the heart of many of our sinful responses and our frustration in the Christian life. So this question may seem short and to the point, and we're going to look at creation and providence really later, but the fact that God carries out His decrees is pretty important for our Christian life. Thomas Vincent says, wherein doth God execute His decrees? God doth execute His decrees in the works of creation. And he's just kind of breaking this down a little bit. But he says, wherein He maketh all things according as He has eternally decreed to make them, and in His works of providence, wherein He preserveth and governeth all things according to His eternal purpose and counsel. So that's the thing really to realize about creation and providence, is they're in accordance with the decree. And so God doesn't decree something and then later change His mind and the things don't work out like He planned. And we're going to look at that as we go, because we're going to compare that to man. When we decide to do something, it rarely ever works out like we plan, because we don't have the power or the means to make it to be so. So there are some important things implied in the answer that are really helpful to us here. It's kind of short today, but seeing a couple of things in the question that are implied, I think are very helpful. Note that there are only two answers. How does God execute His decrees? He executed His decrees in the works of creation and providence. It's not a list of 15 different things or 100 different things. It's basically all of God's decrees are carried out and summarized in two particular ways. And it's important to notice, right? And it's helpful for us as we're trying to get through a particular day or a particular problem. I think it's helpful for us to remember that this problem that I have right now may seem like the biggest thing in the whole world and my whole world is crashing down. But really, this is part of God's providence, which is part of His decree. And so what I'm experiencing has been decreed by God from all eternity. That's the thing. If we think through those things, and I think it's very helpful for us to do that. So first we see what they do. They demonstrate how his decrees are carried out, those two things. But it's interesting to note that there are only two. It might be surprising to us that the catechisms don't break that down further. Beatty has another good comment on this, and sort of comes into a thought process that I had when I was studying. He says, at first glance, there may be some surprise felt that grace and redemption is not also mentioned here. But on looking into the catechisms, and especially the shorter catechism, it will be found that the covenant of works is described as a special act of providence. See, so those things like salvation and all the other things that are being worked out, they fall into one category. That's helpful to me. It's helpful for me to put things into one single category. So, which God exercised toward man in the state of which he was created. In some respects, it might have been better to have said that God executes his decrees in the works of creation, providence, and redemption. So he's suggesting that that's also a possibility. Though the truths taught under this threefold arrangement would be substantially the same. In this exposition, and going forward, the twofold plan of the standards will be followed and is at once entered in upon. So Beatty follows that twofold arrangement of God's working out his decrees. James Fisher says, to which of these works of God does redemption belong? So he's going to kind of help us to see that redemption falls under the idea of providence. Fisher says, to the providence of God as the most glorious part of it toward man. Now that was kind of my thought in working through talking about what we're going to talk about today. I kind of thought that it really sounded like creation could have been included in providence. Like really there was just one category for all of it. And so that was my initial thought was, well, why don't we just include it together? But then it does kind of make sense if you think about how things play out, especially down through the rest of the catechism and even in our Christian life. The catechisms, both larger and shorter, separate out creation from providence. And the one way to think about it is in creation we have the working out of the decree to create the world and all things. And then secondly, in providence we have the working out of his decree to govern it. So making it is separate from governing, though you could say that making it is part of governing it specifically if you had to do so. But it is interesting to see how it's broken into two categories. And spent some time thinking through that this week, so I thought that was helpful to recognize the fact that there are two. Now the larger catechism actually, as it tends to do, goes in a little more detail. And in the larger catechism, the answer is God executed his decrees in the works of creation and providence according to his infallible foreknowledge and the free and immutable counsel of his own will. So it adds some of the qualifiers that we've already kind of talked through some of those. But J.G. Voss asks a couple of questions about these things that I thought was important for us to mention as we go ahead. Voss says, what kind of foreknowledge does God have of all things? And it's an infallible foreknowledge. His foreknowledge is inclusive, exact, and detailed. He asks, what is meant by saying that the counsel of God's will is free? This means that God acted according to his own nature without constraint from any source outside of himself. And then what is meant by saying that the counsel of God's will is immutable? This means that God's purpose cannot be changed by chance or by any of his creatures. What God has decreed will surely come to pass. So that's kind of important to note that, and we're not denying that in the shorter catechism. It just does not mention that specifically in detail with the carrying out of the decrees in question 8. So one of the things we notice from the catechism answer itself as well is that the decrees, in carrying them out, they are works. So creation and providence are both works of God, and they're both things that are accomplished by God. Matthew Henry talks a bit about this. He says, did God begin to work in the creation of the world? Yes. Thou, Lord, in the beginning didst lay the foundations of the earth. And he quotes Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 10. Is God still working today? And so this is a good question, because if if now the works of creation and the works of providence, is God still providentially overseeing all things? So He is working then. God is working. And that's a good thought. Sometimes we tend to fall in the sinful thought process that God is distant and not caring, or that He isn't concerned about things that are happening around us. And many religions follow this type of understanding of God, that God is distant and not concerned with His creatures. But it's important for us to see in this question that we are acknowledging that God is working. He is working now. Yes, was the answer to that question from Matthew Henry. For Christ says, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work," in John 5:17. So there's a good acknowledgement there in John 5 that God is working. And He is working forward with carrying out His providence. Are all His works copied out of His counsels? Yes, for they are where His hand and His counsel determined beforehand to be done. And let's look that verse up, Acts 4:28. Verse 27 of Acts 4, "For truly against your holy servant Jesus, whom you anointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate, with the Gentiles and the people of Israel, were gathered together to do whatever your hand and your purpose determined before to be done." So even the treatment there of Christ is determined beforehand. Important for us to remember. Matthew Henry continues, he says, "Are God's works many?" Yes, and he answers with Psalm 104. "O Lord, how manifold are your works." Psalm 104:24. "O Lord, how manifold are your works. In wisdom you have made them all." So acknowledging that God's works are ongoing, they are many, and they are wise. And what an important thing for us to recognize today, that as we struggle against the will of God or the plan of God for our lives, that God is working, that His works are many, and that they're wise. And how often we forget that. So it's a good thing to be reminded of here in question 8. Are they great? Matthew Henry asks, God's works. Yes, His work is honorable and glorious. Psalm 111 and verse 8. Psalm 111 and verse 8, beginning with verse 7. "The works of His hands are verity and justice. All His precepts are sure. They stand fast forever and ever and are done in truth and uprightness." Are God's works perfect in their kind? Deuteronomy 32:4. Yes, God is the rock and His work is perfect. Can they be amended? Can we change God's works or improve upon them? No, whatsoever God doth, nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. Ecclesiastes 3:14. Ought they to be studied? Yes, they are sought out of all of them that have pleasure therein. Psalm 111 verse 2. Is it a great sin to neglect them? This is a good question too. Do we neglect the works of God? I mean, if we think about the works of God, they're not just limited to everything that happens around me or in my world. God's works are things happening around the world. They're the persecution of Christians on the other side of the world, or sinful acts of sinful people are also included in God's sovereignty and in His works. And so if we neglect that, we tend to misunderstand the God that we serve. So I like this question by Matthew Henry. Is it a great sin to neglect them? Yes, because they regard not the work of the Lord, neither consider the operation of His hands. He shall destroy them and not build them up. And he quotes Psalm 28 in verse 5. Matthew Henry continues, "Can all of God's works be thoroughly discovered?" See, there's another aspect to it. His works are way beyond our understanding. No, he says, "for no man can find out the work that God makes from the beginning to the end." And he quotes Ecclesiastes 3:11. Ecclesiastes 3:11, He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, He has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. So God's works not only are wonderful and manifold, wise, but His works are also past our understanding. Isn't that a good thing to be reminded of as well? I mean, how many times are we frustrated because we don't understand what God is doing, and we automatically assume that whatever's happening is wrong? But we don't have that understanding. Our assumption should be that God's works are good. Can His designs in them be accounted for? Psalm 77:19, No, for His way is in the sea, and His path in the great waters. But is He glorified in them? Lastly, Matthew Henry asked. Yes, all of His works do praise Him. Psalm 145 and verse 10. The works praise God. I think that's really cool to bring that back around and see how that all works together. So look at a couple of definitions here. What does it mean to execute something? So children, when you look at that catechism question and ask how does God execute His decrees, what do you usually... That kind of sounds like, is God putting to death His decrees? Is He... What does execute mean? Execute doesn't always mean that necessarily. So James Fisher gives us some good explaining about what the word execute means. He says, what is it for God to execute His decrees? It is to bring them to pass. So God, in executing His decrees, is just simply bringing them to be. He's allowing them to work themselves out. Or, Fisher continues, he says, give an actual being in time to which and to what He purposed from eternity. And he references Isaiah 46:10. Vincent says also, what is it for God to execute His decrees? God doth execute His decrees when He doth what He eternally purposed to do. So that's another thing to remember, that when God is bringing these decrees to pass, it's what He wants. It's what He's already decided. And God isn't waiting to see what we will do before He makes up His mind what He will do. God's already decided what the decrees will be. And that's, again, easy for us to forget. What He doth, what He eternally purposed to do, when He bringeth to pass what He had before ordained should be. So I like the way Vincent says that. That was Thomas Vincent. Fisher asked, what is it for God to execute? And Vincent asked, what is it for God to execute His decrees? God doth execute His decrees when He doth what He eternally purposed to do, when He bringeth to pass what He had before ordained should be. So two good answers there. How does God use second causes? And see, this is going to expound as we go forward and looking at the providence of God, really, is how does God use things to bring about His will? So we won't spend a whole lot of time on here, but I did want to read what Fisher says here. Does not God leave the execution of His decrees to second causes? Whatever use God may make of second causes in the execution of His decrees, yet they are merely tools in His overruling hand to bring about His glorious designs. They are His servants and must do His pleasure. So we don't want to leave secondary causes then to being the thing that causes something to be. God is still determined that it would be, but He uses the causes to bring about what He's ordained. Again, we'll talk more about that later. James Fisher asks once more, what is the difference between God executing the work of creation and that of providence? And I really wanted to point this out today, that the two things we're talking about that we're going to go into more detail later, they're very different from one another. And so this is a really good reason why we've categorized these two separate categories of creation and providence. There's a lot of differences between the two. So that's why we don't put them all together in that one category. But listen to some of these differences. Fisher says, He executed the work of creation entirely without means by the word of His power, but He executes the work of providence ordinarily in the use of them. Okay, so that's a major difference between creation and providence. That how did God create everything? Out of nothing, right? He just called it into being without there being anything before. But providence is not generally that way. Providence is the working out of the things that are through the process to bring about His will. So there is a major difference between the two, and certainly not one that we would want to overlook today. It's a very critical difference between the two. And one, in fact, creation has no means in the beginning, and one is all about means. Isn't that kind of what providence really is? Is how does God work things out to cause or to be in accordance with His will? And we don't really understand a world without things, without means. We're submersed in a world of means. We're constantly surrounded by people and things and cars and homes and food and shelter and other people. And those are all means that God is working out His plan through. We don't really have a connection in the sense with the creation in the same way. Everything's part of the creation, but we don't think in terms of things coming about without means or from nothing. It's all, we can't really even comprehend that. So it's very important to recognize that difference. Okay, one very good encouragement to us today is the certainty of God's executions. When God decrees something, He brings it to happen. It will happen in a perfect harmony then with the decree as it was given. And that's very different from you and I, because when we decide to do something, it might happen and it might not happen. And very seldom does something happen exactly like you plan it. We can't do that. We don't have the means to control things around us. First, we give imperfect and limited decrees. We can give decrees, right? Not in the same way that God does, but a decree, as we worked out the definition, we decided that a decree was like a plan. It was a way that something was to be. Now, when we decree, we don't decree with foreknowledge and foreordination and all those things that we don't have the ability to do, but we can decide to have a plan and to do something. Well, let's see then that our decrees are imperfect and limited. But secondly, we need to see that we don't really have the means to ensure that our decrees will happen. We don't. We don't have control over the world. We can't tell the creation what to do. We can't really tell other people what to do. Other people can, anyone can disobey another person in the world. Even the person with the greatest authority can be rebelled against. So it's very important to see then how imperfectly that we go about having decrees and bringing them about. James Fisher says, "What difference is there between the decree and the execution of it?" He's talking about God here. "The decree is an imminent or inherent act in God and is nothing else but God decreeing. But the execution is a transient or passing act of His infinite power, bringing the thing decreed into actual existence." So important to see, whenever God decrees something, it will happen. There is no failure of communication. There is no drop off in what He decrees and what happens. If it's decreed, it happens perfectly, infinitely, wisely, and there is no break between the two. Fisher says, "Is there an exact harmony or correspondence between God's decree and the execution of it? When the thing decreed is brought actually into being, it exactly corresponds to the idea or platform of it in the infinite mind of God. So whenever God decrees it, it exactly comes to pass." Fisher asks once more, "Can none of the decrees of God be defeated or fail in their execution?" And the answer to that one's quite obvious. "By no means. The counsel of the Lord shall stand, and He will do all of His pleasure." Isaiah 46:10. "Who has resisted His will?" Romans 9:19. "None can stay His hand or say unto it, what dost thou?" Daniel 4:35. Scriptures are very clear. And then lastly, well, may we learn from God's executing His decrees? The answer, that all His promises shall be punctually accomplished and not one of them fall to the ground. Now, friends, that is a great comfort today. It is a great comfort because we know that what God has decreed in the past, He has brought it to happen so far. So we know then from this truth and from the Scriptures that what He has decreed for us in the future will happen as well. And I like the way that Fisher threw in that word punctually accomplished, because that's, again, one of our big struggles, is that we are impatient. And then when God decrees something, it may have been that He decreed something to take 100 years to work itself out in the life of man, or maybe even 1,000. And many times our frustrations are because we have no patience with God's punctuality. But God has promised us many things throughout the Scriptures, and we know that He'll bring these to be. He's promised us that He will never leave us or forsake us. He's promised us that He will provide for our spiritual needs and even our physical needs. He's promised us that Christ will intercede for us. He's promised us that Christ will not lose us, that we belong to Him. And He's promised us that Christ will defend us and preserve us. And so as we struggle against the decrees of God and having them carried out, do we remember those things on a daily basis? Generally, we don't. Generally, we don't. We tend to struggle against things that are quite obviously stated for us in the Scriptures. And many times it's because we are frustrated with these decrees. So two more counsels here. One from Matthew Henry says, shall all of God's decrees be executed? Yes, for the Lord of hosts hath sworn, surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass. This is Isaiah 14:24. The Lord of hosts has sworn, saying, surely as I have thought, so it shall come to pass. As I have purposed, so it shall stand. So as God purposes something, it's not going to change. It's not going to be altered. It's not going to be manipulated. It's not going to be paused or delayed. It will happen. The Word of God tells us. Can any of God's decrees be defeated? No. And he references Isaiah 14 once more, verse 27. For the Lord of hosts has purposed, and who will annul it? His hand is stretched out, and who will turn it back? So that's comforting today to us. That when God has determined something, it will happen. And a lot of times you can probably think of an example in your own life where you tried, or you would have wanted to stop something that was happening that was part of God's decree. But then ultimately, in the end, you found out that there was a lot of wisdom in that thing that happened. It maybe directed your life in a different way. So it's not just the enemies of God that are fighting against the decrees of God. It's us. We struggle against what God has decreed. And so many times as we grow in a Christian faith, have some wisdom to see that the thing you struggle against the most that's happening in your life is purposed by God, and it has a purpose in your life. Matthew Henry, did God execute His decree in the work of creation? Yes, He created all things. Referencing Revelation 4:11 is a good passage he references. You are worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for You created all things, and by Your will they exist and were created. Does He execute His decrees in the work of providence? Yes, for out of the mouth of the Most High both evil and good proceed. And that is Lamentation 3:38. Is it not from the mouth of the Most High that woe... Actually, let's read verses 37 and 38 from Lamentations. This really goes together. Lamentations 3:37. Who is he who speaks and it comes to pass when the Lord has not commanded it? Is it not from the mouth of the Most High that woe and well-being proceed? Wow, that's a great passage there as far as bringing about the providence of God. We'll look at that more in detail next time. Okay, so one last encouragement from Thomas Watson. He says, God is unchangeable in His essence, and He is unchangeable in His decrees. That's a really good thing to remember there, that not only is God unchangeable, but what God decides to do is unchangeable. His counsel shall stand. He decrees the issue of all things and carries them on to their accomplishment by His providence. And so for you and I today, application-wise, it is so beneficial to see these decrees then in the light of these two divisions. So if you look at the two things that are happening, creation and providence, those are helpful in an everyday life, really, in categorizing what happens around you, that God is in control of those things. So that's something very beneficial from question 8. God has created us, and now we know He'll providentially carry out and govern what He's created us. He doesn't create things and then just leave them. Right? We're not deists. We believe that He providentially controls all things for His will. So we have in the 8th question then today, a number of direct applications. And one of them is certainty. This gives us the thing really that the world longs after the most. And what is that? Meaning. And purpose in life. And the carrying out of decrees is in these two ways. The first defines and establishes the world, and the second is how the world's governed. And that, again, is a fleeting thing to the world. Understand certainty and purpose. Secondly, the details are important today. So there's purpose given to the mundane. There's purpose given to going to work and sitting in traffic. There's purpose given to laundry and to the frustrating things in life. Part of God's decrees, and it should be encouraging to us. So one last thing as we close, I just want to introduce this idea to you, but I think question 8 actually is very helpful in discussing the mediatorial kingship of Christ. And I'm going to spend some time expounding on this in the future, but I did want to mention it today because this division between creation and providence in the mediatorial kingship of Christ is very important. As we want to define mediatorial kingship in the weeks ahead, we want to say that in the RPCNA, we have a very specific statement about in our testimony in section 8 about the mediatorial kingship of Christ. So listen to this and see if you can see a connection to the creation and to providence. Jesus Christ, as mediator, governs all creatures and all their actions for His own glory. See creation there? You see creation there because Jesus is governing all creatures, and He is governing all the things that happen in the world. And so what we want to see then is that the creation account is really defining the boundaries of Christ's kingdom as the mediator. And that's an important thing that's sometimes missed. Because we tend to think, and this is the thing that we work against, that's a common view in churches today, is that Jesus Christ is simply king over the church, but He's not king over the world itself. Well, we stretch that out, and again, we'll expound on that more, but the mediatorial work of Christ extends to the entire creation. Well, that's what the creation does, is it defines the boundaries of that kingship. David Scott is very helpful here. He says, "The dominion of Christ knows no limits except those of creation. It embraces in its wide and extended grasp the whole universe of visible and invisible, of material and immaterial creation." So that's very important to see. Then that all the things that you see and you don't see are part of the creation, and that is the kingdom of Jesus Christ and His mediatorial work. Scott continues, he says, "The mediatorial dominion is of the same extent with the absolute dominion that belongs to God as the Creator. This was given to Christ as His mediatorial dominion without reserve or limitation. In virtue of this, He rules in heaven and in earth and in hell and over all created existence." Again, well, there's a lot there. We're going to expound on that as we go forward. Let me read the last part of the testimony with this. It also says, "Submission is due to Him from all men and angels. All men in every possible relation and condition are under obligation to promote His gracious purposes according to His law. The holy angels minister under His direction to the heirs of salvation." Now listen to this section of the testimony. It's so very clear. It says, "Jesus Christ is head over all things for the sake of the church, rules in perfect wisdom and justice over all parts of His creation, including wicked men and devils. He makes them and all their counsels and efforts serve God's glory in the plan of redemption." One of the most beautiful statements, and so very accurate in the testimony. So that's important for us to see. That's providence. So the creation defines the boundaries of Christ's mediatorial kingship, and providence is the way that the mediatorial king works out that kingdom. Important to mention here in question 8, where the division is made. And I'll try to bring those out in the following questions as well. So the providence of Christ is maintaining His kingship, and the creative ability of God is defining that mediatorial kingdom. Okay, so a lot of good encouraging things here in question 8 and the answer. And we'll expound on those more as we go forward. Let's close in prayer.